This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
IBS is a term a lot of us live with, sometimes for years, but many people are left managing symptoms without much clarity or support, just trying to get through the day comfortably. For some, it's bloating. For others, it's urgency, constipation, or never really trusting their body to cooperate when it matters. Well, this afternoon, we're chatting with Alex Lopez from Pelvic Health Melbourne about IBS, how it shows up in everyday life and where pelvic health fits into the picture. Alex, Happy New Year.
And to you too.
I think there's only a couple of people left I've got to say Happy New Year to. So. Now, let's talk about IBS. It's a label a lot of people carry. When someone walks into your clinic with that diagnosis, what are they usually dealing with day to day?
Generally, it's a condition of discomfort. So the hardest part about IBS for those who are suffering with it, the actual bowel looks normal. So all scans show it's normal, but it doesn't function normally. So it's called a functional gut condition. So often it's bloating. You'll have IBS constipation, where their main symptom is constipation, IBS diarrhea, main system diarrhea, or IBS mixed. So it can really present in any which way. The common feature is discomfort or pain. So that's how you get the diagnosis of IBS, is that you've got a functional gut condition with either constipation, diarrhea, or mixed, with discomfort or pain.
What's slow transit?
Different. So I want to put them in two very separate baskets. Slow transit sort of sits under a functional constipation. So where the stool moves really slowly through the bowel. Now that can have organic reasons. So there could be something wrong with the bowel. So that needs to be investigated, as does IBS. So Warren, I want to say to anyone out there, if you haven't had it investigated, do get it investigated. And the gastroenterologist is the right person to see. And they'll do all the scans, you know, your gastroscope, your colonoscopy, check if there's any organic bowel problems. But slow transit could be that the bowel just doesn't push things along very well. It could be associated with medications you're taking. It could be associated with diabetes. There's so many things it could be. But from our point of view as pelvic health physios, we see the 40% of those with slow transit who have a plug issue. We've talked about this before, Warren, and that's that tight butthole where they're not actually emptying properly. Yeah, they're getting those small, short, skinny poos, and they've just always got that feeling of incomplete emptying. So sometimes it's the tight butthole.
What is it? What are the risks, the health risks of not treating anything like IBS or slow transit?
So IBS is just persistent discomfort. Right. And what often happens, and I'm sure some of your listeners will relate to this, is symptoms just get worse. They get more symptomatic with more foods, coarse foods. So sometimes it's FODMAP or certain types of foods. And the bloating can get really debilitating, and the pain.
Now, for a lot of people, I know IBS shapes how they eat, they travel, they socialise, even plan their mornings. It's so encroaching on their life. What do you hear about the impact in everyday life in your clinic?
It's massive. And I think really getting and working with the team about IBS, because we know there's so much good stuff out there to really help people. Most of our patients will say it's associated with stress. So stress can trigger it. Certain foods can trigger it. Lack of exercise. So keeping, exercising regularly, and sleep hygiene. So they're all the things that we really try and work with our patients on, to try and get it more under control. It may not ever get fixed, but it's about living with the condition and getting it under control so it doesn't rule your life. Rule it.
Messages come in saying, I've been diagnosed with IBS, but I still don't know what causes it.
Most of the time it's a neurological dysfunction. So it's actually the gut axis sends 40% of our total signals to the brain. So if there's a bit more of an increase of signals to the brain from the gut for whatever reason, and we don't know why, then what happens is you get an upregulation, as in the gut becomes sensitive. So for a lot of IBS sufferers, they can feel food moving through the gut. They have something, they bloat incredibly. Yeah, and that causes significant discomfort. So we know this part neurological. So we definitely work with, there's often some nerve pain meds that work really effectively with IBS. We always, from our point of view, we're always talking about regular movement, sleep hygiene, the four things that we mostly work with: breath work, relaxation, exercise, and the pain meds. And what else were we talking about there?
I've got another SMS in. Can we go to that,
yeah.
Alex?
Yeah, of course.
We're chatting with Alex Lopez from Pelvic Health Melbourne about IBS, slow transit, and everyday gut health. Alex, this message has come in saying, I suffer from constant diarrhea and I want to cut back my food intake because I searched on ChatGPT and that told me what to do that. What do you reckon?
Yeah, no. I wouldn't be... Well, there's so many reasons why we can get diarrhea, particularly if it's new onset. So food and nutrition we need to maintain. Mm. Sometimes it's looking at we might have become sensitive to a certain food, but if it's persistent diarrhea, we need to get that investigated. Why is your gut causing faster motility? Why is everything moving through? And particularly if there's pain associated with that. So for that listener, please go and get your gut checked just to make sure that there's nothing else going on. Medication is another big one. So metformin sometimes, a lot of the new Ozempic, so there's some of the new drugs and medication out there for weight management that are having a significant impact on gut health. So don't forget change in medications.
Alex, let's talk about slow transit. What are some of the potential physical obstructions that could be causing it?
So we talked about the tight end plug. So the tight muscles on the outlet is one of 40% of the cases with slow transit. It's actually a tight end plug. Now, you could have had that all your life and it might have started in childhood. Other reasons why we might get slow transit could be genetic. So the bowel should pump and contract continuously. And if that's just a genetic slowness in you, that could be some reason why there's slow transit. And we also talked about diabetes and neurological conditions. So anyone with those conditions, sometimes their gut is slower than others. And you'll know because you don't go as often. Yeah, and things are generally slower for you to metabolise. Particularly, you can check with grapes. You can check with corn. They're the things that don't digest well, and they take a while before you see it come through in the poo.
I thought I was
raisins, not grapes. Yeah,
corn. It's like a great sort of little sign, isn't it? You'd swallow.
Of course, it.
It
is the corn test. We'll often do that with our patients. Just get some corn and see how long it takes to come through.
Now, when someone says to you, "Look, nothing moves properly. I never feel empty." What possibilities are you starting to think about in your head?
Because we're physios, we'll go straight to the muscle area. Right. So we want to make sure that all the conditions, like the organic conditions, have been cleared. And then we'll look at tight muscles. So we'll go with assessing the person, not going straight to anything internal, but often we can use our real-time ultrasound machine, which will show us the muscles and we can see, are they actually relaxing properly? We can mimic a kind of a poo mechanics. It's a bit real and graphic, but not, again, we're not seeing anything, but just by touching on the outside of their clothes, we know that when you kind of do a poo or mimic a poo, the anus should drop down about a centimetre. And for most of our clients, it doesn't move at all. They're just gripping on and they're not even aware of it. So we'll do lots of relaxation work, breath work, stretches around that area, and massage just to try and soften it all off to help with emptying.
Is that something that everyone should be doing anyway, some sort of relaxation exercises for that area to make sure everything is working properly?
Only if you've got a dysfunction. Right. If you know that your poop's coming out, your diameter's sort of 20 to 50 cents, it feels like an effective empty and you've emptied well all your life without having to strain, I don't feel that you need to. That's good, effective bowel motions. And if you're emptying anywhere between three times a day and three times a week, that's again considered normal. So if you sit within the normal, you're quite comfortable, no, there's no indication to kind of follow that up. But there's not many of us.
Oh, Alex, looks like we might have dropped out for a little bit. We'll try and get you back.
We can Joy have a lot of people talking 94. About these conditions.
Oh, we've got you back. Good, Alex. Sorry, we dropped off for a second. I want to talk about what's normal because the last thing we want to do is alarm someone and think, oh, my goodness, I'm not getting X amount of motions per day. What is considered normal?
So normal for motions, anywhere between three times a day and three times a week is considered normal.
So if anyone's outside of that, that's when they should go and seek medical help.
That's right. So you get urgency. Some people get urgency, meaning they're going 5, 6, 7 times a day, and they'll say to me, "Alex, I definitely have something there." I'm not questioning that they have something there. It's just that their bowel or their rectum's got hypersensitive, so we've actually got to calm it down and stop it creating signals when it really shouldn't. And then the other side, which is your slow, will tend to be, I've had some patients only go once every 2 weeks, and of course, significant discomfort.
We're chatting with Alex Lopez from Pelvic Health Melbourne about IBS and slow transit. Alex, what are some of the myths that you often hear people come in and say, "Oh, look, you know what, I've got it because of this"? What are the common myths that you hear?
Probably IBS, the big one is it's in your head. Because they've been to many practitioners and they'll say, "Look, your bowel looks healthy." So their automatically assumption, and for those who perhaps in the medical field who may not be all over the bowel, is that inference that, no, you're making it up. And that's terrible because it is actual known functional gut condition. The other one is eat more fiber. Fiber can be problematic for many people. So it's really about filtering and finding the right fibers for you and the right diet for you.
When would we consider coming and seeing a physio like yourself?
The physio side of things is much more so us for gut, definitely on the IBS and the pain and the bloating. We can help a little bit with that, but we are much stronger on the functional gut, the outlet disorders. If you're unable to empty completely, if you feel dissatisfied with your empty and or there's constipation, then that's when we come in, as well as fissures, recurrent hemorrhoids and straining. So that suggests that there's an outlet dysfunction. That's our particular expertise.
What if someone's going too often?
Yeah, no, we definitely have that. So again, I'm sorry, I'm getting into such detail. We have these called rectal balloons, where we're able to assess the actual sensitivity of the rectum for our clients and show them, well, this is what normal should feel like. Because often they're going at small triggers, and we do talk about pacing, you've got to hold on. Once you've actually worked with people with urgency and explained just hold on, it normally settles really quickly.
What about bloating? You touched on bloating for a little while. What can you do for people who have a lot of bloating?
Bloating is really difficult. We actually don't understand the mechanism behind the bloating. So this is really difficult for people to understand because nobody can explain it adequately because there's nothing often functionally wrong or organically wrong. Again, it's often about relaxation, stretching, good sleep hygiene, and the nerve meds that can help the bloating symptoms. For some patients or for some individuals, a lower FODMAP diet. So Monash University has brilliant resources on their FODMAP diet. And there's a fantastic Nerva app, which is great, all about the mindfulness of the gut and breath work.
Alan Preston says, "Can stress really mess with your gut this much, or is that just something people say?"
No, stress is, we all know when we're anxious, we have to race to the toilet. Mm. If you have high stress, that is going to throw the input to your gut hugely. And remember, our brain is ginormous in terms of its influence. 40% of our brain input comes from the gut. That's a huge input that can be altered. So stress has a significant gut input. So controlling stress and working on stress can really help gut health.
Sarah in Altona says, "I'm glad Alex is talking about this. I never feel properly empty. It's something I'm going to get checked now."
Awesome. Good pelvic health physio who works specifically in gut and in bowels.
Now, Nick in Brunswick, "I plan my mornings around the toilet." I mean, it is so inconvenient, isn't it? And especially if you're told, "Oh, look, it's nothing. It's in your mind."
Nick, thank you for that question, because what is amazing, and this is what we do a lot with kids, but we do it with adults, particularly who have these worries and don't empty completely, you can actually train your gut to go at a certain time of the day. So we have 5 mass movements over the day, and we can kind of control them. The biggest one's in the morning, 45 minutes after waking, and the others are generally 30 minutes after eating. So what you do is you work with when you generally go, and it starts to become habitual. If you get up after 15 minutes, you have something to eat, you move around, walk a bit, and 45 minutes after waking, so that's hitting with the 2 of the mass movements, you sit on the toilet, doesn't matter if you've got a urge or not, After you do that every day, after a while, you can start to train your bowel to go at a set time that suits you.
Oh, my God, that's like training the cat to go on the toilet.
Correct, correct. Our bodies are incredible. For some of you, you'll know you wake up or you go like clockwork and you always go at a set time. Your body can be trained in that situation. The key here is you're actually sitting on the toilet at a time base, not necessarily associated with urge, and you need to do it daily to see if the bowel will start to get some success at the time that's convenient for you.
So did you say what, roughly 45 minutes after eating? Was that right?
It's 45 minutes after waking.
After waking.
So you wake, 15 minutes later have something to eat, mm-hmm. move around because movement helps, big breaths, that sort of thing, and then half an hour after eating, which is 45 minutes after waking, have a sit on the toilet.
Alex, I'm going to do it tomorrow. Love our chat. So informative.
As always. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks for joining us. That was Alex Lopez from Pelvic Health Melbourne.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.